The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
For the next 15 minutes or so, we're going to be discussing strategies and techniques to help you navigate and hopefully master some of the techniques you'll be needing to successfully compete in the fall OCI process. But before we get there, it's worth taking a few moments to give you an overview of the fall OCI on-campus interview process to give you a perspective so that you can put this information and these strategies in context. Now, the on-campus interview season is a rather unique one in that it lives basically during the fall periods of the school year and involves typically larger legal employers. Having said that, there are certainly exceptions, and I'll name a few as we go. But we want to take a look at who basically these employers are, what they are looking for, and how they hire before we get into the sort of anatomy of an effective first-round interview. Who are these legal employers? Well, as I said, they're basically larger legal employers, but that doesn't mean that they're the best legal employers. And in terms of the scope, you have a range from private sector legal employers, 1,000-plus attorney firms that are multinational, all the way to smaller regional employers and public employers as well. We have plenty of attorney general's offices, prosecutor's offices coming on campus as well. And I make that distinction so that there's no mistake about it. There's no hierarchy in terms of one employer is better than another based on pure size. But students oftentimes fall victim to that kind of grapevine talk. Again, all the employers that participate in this program are very legitimate employers and offer great career trajectories. Having said that, a more important caveat is to recognize that by no means do these employers, do the employers that participate in the fall on-campus interview process, constitute the entirety of legal employers out there. To the contrary, they're somewhat of the minority. But because of the sort of excitement and attention they get, students oftentimes feel like this is really the employment opportunity. And if I don't get my job through this process, I have very few opportunities to get employment afterwards. And nothing could be further from the truth. But that's not the point of this conversation, but that's an important point to make. Having said that, I will tell you statistically about one quarter of the WCL graduates each year go on to work for firms and public sector employers that are participating in the fall recruitment process. So clearly, three quarters plus participate and work for employers outside of this, this realm. So hopefully that serves as some perspective. In terms of how they recruit, painting with broad strokes here, you're looking basically at a legal employer that, as I call, sometimes sort of recruits inside the box. That is to say, they're very grades-driven at first blush. Not to say that they're exclusively grades-driven, but that grades do very much drive the selection process as to who receives one of these first-round interviews, otherwise known as screening interviews, because as we'll see in a moment, that's exactly what we're doing here. That's exactly what these employers are doing here. They're spending about 20 minutes with you to screen whether or not they want to call you back for a more substantive interview, usually in their offices, or always in their offices. But that's called a callback interview, and that's a subject for another discussion. Yes, they do look at grades, but that's not the only thing they look at. But having said that, it's statistically more likely that someone in the top 5% of the class will receive more interview offers, perhaps, than someone in the top 25% or someone in the top half. But this does not mean that if you are not in the top half of the class, God forbid, and I say that facetiously, you should self-select out of the fall recruitment process. Absolutely not. Everyone who's interested and working for one of these employers should very much feel free to participate in this process. Again, recognizing that this is just a single component of the employment process. Okay. All right, let's move forward in terms of the big picture in terms of what the employers are looking for. The employers, again, are treating this as a screening interview. You have 20 minutes, 20 brief minutes to really make an impression that you can do the work, will do the work, and will fit within this organization. Sort of the three big pillars of any interview. You can do the work. That is, you have the intellectual capacity to do the work. And as I said earlier, this oftentimes is why employers sort of zero in on grades, thinking that grades equate with ability to do the work. And for many reasons, we know that's not true, but that's sort of a premise they begin with. So to the extent that you've been selected for an interview, they've sort of overcome the hurdle that, okay, this person has the intellectual ability to do the work. Then they're looking at, will you do the work? That is, what is your work ethic like? It's one thing to be naturally intelligent. It's another thing to be intelligent and have a good work ethic. And this is really what they're starting to really get to in the interview process. And then the third major component is, will you fit within this organization? And sometimes this is the super issue, that is to say, the overwhelming factor that an employer decides to call you back or not call you back on is the fact that they don't think you'll fit within their firm for whatever reason. And we'll get into that in a bit. The best way for you to prepare for one of these interviews is to do a mock interview with one of the counselors in our office, the Office of Career and Professional Development, and or to participate in the OCPD mock interview week, where students can go to actual employers out there, you typically alumni who are willing to conduct mock interviews, and simulate this environment in an actual place of employ. But short of that, this video hopefully will give you, this segment will give you some good strategies and techniques if you haven't had either of those opportunities. And if you have had opportunities to do that, hopefully this will reinforce and supplement some of that information. Okay. Oh, actually, and some other resources you might want to consider, quite good, an insider's guide to interviewing. This is the NALP guide that we have here for free, and that you should come pick one up. Guerrilla Tactics for Getting the Legal Job of Your Dreams by Kim Walton is also a very good resource to look at. And there are others too, not the least of which is the Office of Career and Professional Development's website under the job search skills section. Sample questions in there, sample answers, interview dress, and all of that stuff is addressed there too. Moving forward now, so in terms of the 20-minute first round screening interview in the OCI context, what are these employers exploring? Well, we talked about the fit being a very important one. And related to that and to your work ethic is professionalism and maturity. This is very much a sizing up of the candidate. First impressions are real important here, as are the subsequent impressions you make with respect to your interaction with this employer. How professional do you come across in your demeanor? How confident are you in your verbal and nonverbal communication skills? Are you sitting there sort of frozen like a deer in the headlights? Or are you quite comfortable, but not arrogant, but comfortable in this interview setting, such that this person, typically on the private side, a partner, or on the public side, maybe a director of the legal staff, such that they can envision seeing you by their side when they are with a client or when they are opposing counsel, such that they feel comfortable having you there and knowing that you'll feel comfortable in that setting. So these are the things that they're trying to assess in these very brief 20 minutes. That's why there's not a whole lot of latitude for failure. You really want to start off strong and continue strong throughout those 20 minutes. How professional and mature are you with respect to that interaction during the interview, but also in terms of how you present yourself in writing, that is, your resume. Is it well written? Are there typos? If there are typos, you're typically dead in the water. Because look, if you're giving me your best writing sample, that is your resume or your cover letter, and there's an error in it, then that means that this is your best work product. And if this is the best you can do, then that certainly does not live up to our standards, and you're typically passed over. So that's just a caveat about typos or grammatical problems or errors in your resume. Have a counselor, an OCPD counselor, look these documents over before submitting them. Okay, in terms of your appearance, just a moment about dress. This is an interview, a formal interview with typically more conservative employers, that is the legal employer. It's not the time to bring out Saturday night's best in terms of your attire. Now, the other extreme is sort of everyone defaults to navy blue or black. And certainly you can't go wrong with a navy blue suit or a dark suit, dark colors, and white shirt for gentlemen, white blouse for women, and that's fine. But don't feel like you need to be a lemming and be like everyone else exactly in the same attire. To the contrary, a little bit of fashion flair. Again, there's a balancing test there. It can be quite appropriate. If you have any questions, please ask one of the counselors as to whether or not you think a particular attire is appropriate or not. Because it can be, it is an important element, and you don't want to distract an interviewer with something that's inappropriate. But then again, you want to somehow distinguish yourself, perhaps, from everyone else in the black suit, white shirt, dark tie look. Okay, enough of that. Exploring here in terms of the interview, interviewer, your work ethic, huh? In terms of your answers that you give and the anecdotes that you share with respect to your academic experiences, with respect to any volunteer or paid positions that you may have had. How do you share these stories of your successes? Are you just describing dry job functionalities that you had during these positions and or academic experiences? Or are you enlightening them about your work ethic and the fact that you do more than just what's asked of you in these anecdotes, explaining past work experiences, past volunteer experiences, and anything else that might be relevant during this interview? Very much on the line here is are the employer exploring your motivations for working, not only in this law firm, that is, why are you looking at our firm, or why do you want to work with our federal agency or our defender service? But also, perhaps in this geography, that is, geographic region, there are employers coming from around the country to interview here. And very often, not very often, but many times you hear stories of students going in and otherwise doing a good job, selling themselves to the firm, but to a firm or an employer's profile that doesn't meet the one that's on campus. That is to say, they're selling themselves perfectly for the New York office, but it's the Philadelphia office that's actually interviewing here. And you sort of misconnect that way. So you need to be very diligent, do your due diligence in terms of which office they're interviewing for and what are the credentials that they're seeking beyond those of mere grades. That is, what are the character traits that make for a successful associate with this federal agency, this state agency, this law firm? Another motivation they're looking for sometimes is why do you want to enter this practice? Now, this is typically less so the case in the Rising 2L scenario, and not even as much in the Rising 3L scenario. But when you have demonstrated a particular interest and a background, and that legal employer has such a practice, well, then you should expect that there will be some significant and substantial conversation and substantive conversation about this practice area and about your interest in it. So you'll need to be able to articulate that. And to the contrary, where there is an where there is a trend of experience in a practice area that you no longer want to be affiliated with or you want to branch out, you'll similarly need to be prepared to explain that there's more to you than just this single practice area, and that indeed you are looking to branch out into other practice areas. And a mock interview is a good place to hash out those strategies. So what strategies do you want to employ during this first round interview? Well, as I said earlier, first impressions, a good handshake, direct eye contact, and a smile. It's a great way to start an interview. These small nuances register, believe me. When they are interviewing 20 people in a single day in back-to-back 20-minute intervals with individuals whom are, for all intents and purposes, you know, pretty comparable in terms of their academic performance and their backgrounds and maybe even the way they're dressed, you need to distinguish yourself as often as possible, favorably I should say, so that at the end of the day when they're selecting two or three people out of 20 to come back for a callback, you'll be that person. Don't have your cell phone with you if you can, stay away from it, and if you do, turn it off. That's very distracting, can be considered very unprofessional, and might cost you a callback interview in a moment's notice. So cell phones should be out of the room and left at home if possible. Be prepared. Know everything you can about this legal employer. And know things to the extent you can that are beyond the generic, beyond just the published website information. And you know, this can require a lot of work, and often does, in terms of your due diligence. But if you want to distinguish yourself and impress these employers, this is the way to do it. Be able to talk to them about timely information that affects their clientele, that affects their bottom line if it's a private employer. Be up to speed on what's going on in the world of finance and or in the world that they practice in, if it's labor and employment law, for instance, what's the Supreme Court recently ruled with respect to affirmative action, etc. Sort of know their game and know how you want to pitch yourself to them. Know very much about yourself. They'll be asking questions that are going to require your response about your personal motivations for working not only in this firm or this agency, but also within, as I said earlier, this geographic office of this agency, and possibly even within this practice area. So you need to have responses where you can convincingly articulate why you're the right person for this job, showing that you've been introspective enough to understand that, yes, this is a career trajectory that makes sense for me, and this is why. Know about them, as I said earlier. Be up to speed on their business. Be up to speed on the interviewers themselves. There's too much information out there that if you don't have the most basic of information on the interviewer, him or herself, you're really negligent, and that will show very quickly. I think the other side to that, that coin can be sort of almost a stalker-like amount of information that you might have on an individual. Certainly you don't want to over-impress someone that, whereas you know too much information, or you disclose that you know too much information about them. That can be almost sort of creepy. But again, we're talking about a professional balance here. Talk about, you know, flattery will get you everywhere, so to speak. So if the firm or the agency has been positively mentioned in media and news recently, in the AmLaw 100, for instance, let them know that, and that you're impressed by that, and perhaps not just make that statement, but have conversation generate from that. If the agency has been really held in highlight, or if the firm has been held something negative about it, don't avoid that either. Mention it, broach it. They'll respect you more for it and recognize that you're mature in bringing that to the table. But not as an indictment, just as a point of conversation to get their side of the story, if you will. Okay. Know what's in your resume. Very often, candidates undermine their own credibility by being unprepared vis-a-vis their resume content. That is to say, an employer might ask, "So, John, you know, tell me about this work that you did right out of college." And if that was 3 or 4 years ago, for instance, or not even, it could be a year or two ago. But anyway, if it's not fresh on your mind, if you take a moment to recollect it, or if you even admit that, "Wow, that was a while ago. I sort of really forgot what I've done there," that's a kiss of death. You need, if it's on your resume, you better be very comfortable speaking about the entirety of those experiences, those language skills, those interests, those courses, those organizations that you volunteer for, that political campaign that you volunteer for. You better be able to articulate your rationale and your experiences there too, especially in such a way that they speak to the value that you can bring to this particular employer. Okay. And again, be prepared in terms of having extra documentation with you. Always come in with a portfolio, where you should have an extra hard copy of your resume on resume paper, references, writing samples, and transcript. Especially if they're being asked of you in advance, you want to have them available. But even if they're not, have copies with you, because the worst thing that can happen, well, not the worst thing, but it's not a great thing when an employer asks you for a copy of something that you just don't have with you. Because again, they're projecting into the future. What if we were going to court together and you were sitting second chair in this trial and they asked you for a document that the judge just asked them for and you don't have that with you? That's what they're getting at here. Not just what's happening in these 20 minutes, but what's happening in these 20 minutes and as that speaks to your ability to perform well in the workplace. Okay. I like to bottom line it by saying, in terms of what you want to convey during the interview, that you're selling your agenda, and I don't mean selling in a bad way. I just mean that you're a very effective advocate of your campaign to be this summer clerk, this summer associate. This is not an environment where you should be coy or shy about your background and experience. Similarly, this is not an environment where you should be overly boastful. This is an environment where you should be presenting, or as I say, selling, or advocating for your candidacy in a very effective and confident way. That's what they're asking of you. That's what's expected of you. Anything less of that is on the poorer performance side. So, what happens during the 20 minutes behind closed doors in terms of questions and answers? Well, most of it is going to be a question and answer type of scenario, but not always. There are exceptions, and there are some interviewers, quite frankly, that don't have great interviewing skills. And there are certainly plenty of stories where the poor interviewee has been sitting for 15 minutes just listening to a soliloquy by the interviewer, and the individual hasn't had much time at all to interject about their candidacy. That typically is not the case, although, again, that certainly does happen from time to time. Typically, instead, an effective interviewer will open up with a very open statement, such as, tell me about yourself. And a lot of time that elicits sort of shock and awe. Well, what do you want to know? No. Be prepared for these kinds of open-ended questions that are questions that are not necessarily definitive. You could tell me about yourself in any number of ways, and there's no right answer to this. But the elements of an effective answer should certainly combine the motivations why you're here, the motivations perhaps why you decided to go to law school, the motivations perhaps why you're in D.C., and interviewing for a position in Chicago. Any and all of these can be integrated, and that's not a finite answer there. But the point is, you want to be able to tell the employer a story. Think of the technique here very much so as effective advocacy, but in a story-like manner. In all the movies that you see about lawyers in the courtroom, they oftentimes do end up saying to the jury that, well, let me tell you a story. And quite frankly, that is very effective. Now, you don't want to lead with those words. But in essence, you do want to tell a series of stories that are responsive to the interviewer's questions, but that also illuminate more about who you are, what your motivations are, what your professionalism is like, what your work ethic is like, and how mature you are as an individual and prospective attorney with this employer. Another typical kind of big picture question might be, tell me about your strengths, or tell me about your weaknesses. And people cower over these questions sometimes. And in terms of the weaknesses, understand that we all have weaknesses, and that's fine. The real story needs to be, not which is the right weakness and which is the wrong weakness, but telling a story about a weakness that you have, and going further in explaining what you've done to overcome this weakness, even if you're still in the process of overcoming. So they want to see that you are, again, self-reflective enough to understand that, of course, you have some shortcomings, we all do, and that you've identified them, and that you're perfectly comfortable discussing them in a mature context, because you have taken steps to remedy these. So that's the real strategy here. It's not filling in the blanks to the right answer. It's having the right approach to whatever your profile allows. This is all about being genuine, having a story that comes from your fact pattern, and not trying to borrow one from someone else or from some book that talks to you about interviewing skills. Again, a mock interview helps flush this stuff out, and we can better work with you on how to craft responses to that. But this presentation hopefully will at least flush these issues out for your information and to make you aware of that. Why did you decide to go to law school? Why did you decide to go to the Washington College of Law? Why did you choose such courses? Why did you choose that undergraduate institution and or major? Why did you decide to join this organization? Why did you work for Senator so-and-so? Why did you work for this public interest organization? These are all pretty standard resume-driven questions that you can expect to be asked, and you should have very solid answers to them. Again, with all those other things in mind in terms of demonstrating anecdotally why you're the right candidate for this organization. Where do you see yourself in 5 to 10 years is a big question. I don't want to give an answer here, because a lot of people think that that's the exclusive answer, and that's the right answer. That's something that should be born of the genuineness of your motivations to go to law school, and something that can be worked out with one of our counselors. Because your story will be very different than someone else's story, and if you're all singing the same story, it will come across sounding very canned, very rehearsed, and very ineffective. But expect that question may be asked of you. So the point is, are you answering these questions effectively, not just answering them as in a deposition where someone's asking you a question, you provide an answer. Someone asks you a question, you provide an answer. That kind of ping pong is not the best interview scenario. Better than that would be a scenario that's more like a conversation, where perhaps an interviewer asks you a question, and you answer that question for sure. But then if appropriate, and if the dynamics are right, maybe you asking a question back to the interviewer, or answering the question and then asking the interviewer, by the way, that was a very interesting question, and to the extent that speaks to who the ideal candidate might be for your organization, what other attributes make for a successful associate with your organization or firm. So it's taking what they're offering you, being responsive to it in an effective manner, but then also perhaps using that as a launching pad to get the speaker to talk about him or herself. You know, we all like to talk about ourselves. So if you can draw that out of the speaker, that can be a very effective technique. So those are questions, typical questions of you. Many more are depicted on the OCPD website, things to be expected. But then there will be asked of you questions from you. That is to say, 20 minutes is not a long time to impress someone and to create a relationship. Nevertheless, that's what you're charged with doing. But regardless of how much back and forth has gone on during the interview, you can almost be guaranteed that at the end of the interview, the interviewer will be asking you, so, do you have any questions of me? Or do you have any additional questions that I haven't answered? And this sometimes causes discomfort, because people are wondering, what do they want to really know? What's the right question to ask? And again, yes, you should have some emergency questions sort of tucked into your belt in case you can't think of anything else, you can ask these. But please don't ask questions that are clearly, that could clearly be answered through website research, etc. Instead, you want to try to ask questions that are germane to the 20 minutes you just spent with that individual, that are organic to the conversation that you just had, as opposed to some out-of-the-box question that you pull and ask. Asking questions that harken back to a point that the interviewer made can be a very effective interview technique in that it shows you are an active listener, you are engaged in this conversation, and that you are genuinely interested in these issues that the employer, that the prospective employer was talking about. So the best questions you can ask are ones that germinate from the conversation you just had, even if it's going back to something the person said 20 minutes earlier at the beginning of the conversation. Or perhaps, as opposed to asking a question, you ask the interviewer, well, you say to the interviewer at that point, it's not so much of a question, Mr. or Mrs. Interviewer, but I did want to go back perhaps and readdress an earlier question you raised. Or when I gave a response earlier, I sensed that maybe you were somewhat uncomfortable with my response, and I wanted to address any deficiencies perhaps in my candidacy. So these are other techniques you can employ during this period to reboot your candidacy if you had unintentionally off-tracked it earlier, and to almost bring closure to this 20-minute conversation on your candidacy. Okay, 20 minutes is over, the interview is over, you need to shake hands again, smile, be very grateful, eye contact, thank you goes a long way. Say thank you, thank the interviewer for their time. Ask the interviewer if there are any documents that they need from you, writing sample, resume, transcript, etc. Also, don't be afraid to ask what the next steps are. If they haven't already disclosed them, ask them, well, what's the turnaround time? When should I be expecting to hear? And let them tell you. And then perhaps you ask, well, if I haven't heard in that time, should I follow up with you? Or is there someone else with whom I should be following up? That is getting permission to keep the interaction going if you haven't heard in a particular time period. Okay. And one final matter on thank yous is the thank you note itself. In the context of the fall OCI screening interview, again, a very unique beast, you're not necessarily expected to write thank you notes for these interviews. Having said that, it does not mean you should not write such thank you notes, especially for employers that you're very interested in working for. If there are a handful of employers that you are very keen on working for, I would endeavor to send them thank you notes, typically by email, because, again, in the OCI context, turnover is very fast. Sometimes they're making these callback decisions that day, if not within maybe 24 or 72 hours. So snail mail might not get there. So it's okay at this point to email a thank you to the interviewer within 24 hours. I would not be sending it 15 minutes after the interview, but within 24 hours. That email, however, should be very professionally written. Just because it's an email, it doesn't mean there's informalities involved. And that's one of the issues we see happening a lot with students, that is the perceived informality in exchanging information by email, because it is by email and not typed up or not printed out. Don't make that mistake. So if you're going to send a thank you by email, that's fine, but start it off with Dear Mr. or Ms. So-and-so, semicolon, and then the content of your thank you note, and then is sincerely. With that, we wish you very good luck on the fall OCI process, and again encourage you to use our services to make an appointment with our counselors, to use the CareerLink resources and the many other resources that we have posted on the OCPD website. Thanks.